there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hey folks, welcome to the 32nd episode of The Conversation on Nordic Film Podcast. This time we're going Swedish and looking at The Square. A Palme d'Or winner of some sort, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was the special selection.
Yeah, I can't pronounce that.
In certain regard,
yes.
Yeah,
we kind of, those films kind of land on our table, don't they? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what have you been up to? What are you drinking?
Yes, what am I drinking? I've been waiting for this moment.
Yeah.
So
we decided you need to like open it live.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Wow.
Ah, that was nice.
That is good podcasting right there.
Ah.
Wow.
All right. So today I'm drinking an Indian pale ale supplied by your girlfriend.
Of course.
Who came for a visit for a few days.
Yes, I did send my associate over there for you know, research. Yes. and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Did she do okay? Was she a bearable house guest?
She was completely fine, but she got me drunk in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Because I had a day off and took care of her and, you know.
Yeah, see, she does that.
She poured beer over me.
Yeah.
And made me drink really, really strong beer.
Yeah, she does that.
Yeah.
She's it's tricky with her.
Yeah. But you know, it's not a bad thing, I wouldn't say. What about you? What are you not watching but drinking?
I'm drinking. I did and this is also from my associate, my girlfriend.
Okay.
She bought this. And actually in the toll free when she came back from you guys. And
okay.
It's an Einstök. It's an Icelandic brewery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Christmas beer. It's called Winter Ale. Mm-hmm. Let me just...
A bit darker than your preferred.
Yes,
type.
Very much. Mm-hmm. So. I did try it. I almost vomited and then I put it away. It's that same
great
feeling
review.
I got when you remember you got me a beer.
Yeah.
A special beer that you mm-hmm. wanted to give me and grateful, of course. But I practically, you know, projectile vomited that just, there's something. This is why I want to read it a little bit, what's going on here. Super limited edition winter ale brewed with smoked Icelandic barley and hand-picked spruce tips. Soaked in new whiskey. So what do you think it is that's bothering me so much?
The smoked stuff, maybe?
Smoked barley?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe
I
that
cook,
smoked taste?
I use barley for food. I mean, maybe it's the whiskey thing. What's,
but you drink whiskey? Or
I have been known to do that, but I don't do it much anymore. What about the spruce tips? What's that? It's a spruce tip.
I don't want to go into that live on air here.
Let's not Google it.
Maybe you just have an affinity for lighter, wheaty beer.
I like wheat. I've always liked wheat and bread of any kind.
Yeah, I mean, so. Who don't? Who doesn't?
Who don't?
Who don't?
Yeah. I must just mention something. I got a present from you when she came back.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And it's this Christmas calendar thing from this Danish guy called Chili Klaus.
Yeah.
And he looks almost exactly like me.
Mm-hmm. It is uncanny.
It is. It is weird. My son keeps saying, puppy, puppy, when he looks at it. He points and says, puppy, puppy.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to make some sort of meeting happen where you
that,
can eat chili together. It would be the weirdest video to ever see.
And I like chili.
Yes.
I just made chili for dinner just now, actually.
Just like pure chili.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, soul food, chili, meat mm-hmm. and stuff, you know. But mm-hmm. That would be good. I need to become as famous as he is, maybe, and then we can do it. What do you think?
Maybe. Or maybe he can skyrocket your fame in Iceland as the new Chili Klaus. The Chili Tikvi.
There's an idea.
Hate well, the Tikvi.
I am well on my way to becoming really famous. So let's see what happens.
It's just a matter of time, man.
Yeah, I guess. So let's move on. I'm
looking forward to hearing you what you feel about all those chili chocolates because every one of them has a rating.
Yeah, it's a chili chocolate chili. Kind of a Christmas calendar thing, one a day.
Yeah.
In December, so and apparently they get more, the chili gets stronger as you go.
Yes.
So I'm just really looking forward to December now. Yeah.
Well, you are so welcome. Yes, that is the benefit of being a partner in crime.
Yes. Yes, you did not get anything from me. Oh, you did get my associate getting you drunk there, so that's something, I guess.
Yeah, and I yes. Yes, and she also brought me a beer. So.
Yeah.
Well, so that's something. She thought about me. Well, I guess. Okay. I also wanted to give you a pen that didn't click, but I just didn't have time to get it.
Need to let me be myself, I'm thinking, maybe.
I want to change you.
I will always be clicking my pen.
All right. Yeah.
Moving on.
Have you been watching anything while Shep has been away?
I watched one film while Shep was away. Me and, uh-huh. and Simli were, of course, alone here, and... it's just there's plenty to do. You need mm-hmm. to, and he always wakes up early, so I need to go to bed early. So there's no time.
Yes.
I did though. There was one a short night, shall we say? So I watched a movie, and I was just tired. So I just went to Netflix and mm-hmm. went to the Usual Suspects kind of, you know, 90s crime thing, mm-hmm. and I watched True Crime by. Okay. Clint Eastwood, yes. Very mediocre film. Okay. I have nothing else to say about actually that. But I will say that I watched Midsommar Murders, of course, you know.
The series. Or like the ever-continuing
yes,
saga.
Yes, these are films, of course, TV films. Uh-huh. And annoyingly, Shep pointed out the killer again within the first 5 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, like always, she didn't know why, but she just kind of knew, though.
It was the janitor.
It's right? mildly impressive, but mostly annoying because she does not shut up about it.
Well, I've been watching, have to be better.
Yeah. One other film I want to mention here, and that's Arthur Christmas. This is the go-to film for my son now. He says, okay. Yola, Yola, Yola.
Yeah.
That means, yes, this is a Christmas film. It's a Sony something from 2011.
Also on Netflix?
Yes. I believe Shepna mentioned it to you. Recommended it, actually.
Maybe. Arthur Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very good film, actually. It's very funny. Hugh Laurie, Bill Nighy. Jim Broadbent, Malta Staunton, and James McAvoy. It's pretty and damn good, and we keep watching it over and over and over and over because Simulate just loves it.
Okay, and that's a win-win.
Yeah,
getting into like the Christmas spirit
ten times at least, and there's always something new to notice.
So, okay.
Yeah,
it's on my watch list now.
Yeah. You should. Mm. And let me know how Rushko likes it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she has started, just to cut in here, to watch the Danish TV show or like children's episodes called Bamse and Kylling.
Yeah.
I know she's been doing it before, but now she's just really getting excited about that.
Okay.
And she's learning all these phrases from Bamse and Kylling.
Okay.
So now she's... saying like, here you go, when you're she's handing you something, because they're always saying that. Then
yeah,
Bamse is also saying this phrase in Danish, det tænkte jeg nok. Well, I thought that would happen.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
similar to that. Yeah. And now she's using that phrase all the time, like while she's doing this like gesture on her mouth, like I thought about that, or like I thought that would happen.
Yeah,
it's just like random things.
I expected that.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, I expected that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so yeah.
She's,
I mean,
she's very quick with the words and everything.
I mean, yeah. Just today, actually, we were told that in her daycare, she was saying like sentences of like 5-6 words, like I don't want to walk anymore. You know.
It's really.
Like, God. What's going on? Like, slow down, girl.
I mean, Schimmel is in like 3 words now, mostly, mm-hmm. but it's like more every day.
Yeah,
it's like more words. Just, like yeah. You hear like 10 new words every day.
Mm-hmm. It's when amazing they get time. Exposed to all these things.
Yeah,
you know, it's great.
Yeah,
yeah. So I've been watching Bamse and Kylling as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's.
So that's a bear and chicken, yes?
Bear, chicken, and, well, like a teddy bear, and then a big chicken, and a big duck, duckling, actually.
Seems like an effective trio.
Yeah, and the bear is always better knowing, very annoying, and kind of like an entitled little kid. But everybody loves him when they're watching him as a kid. I did. And at a certain point, you realize that he's really evil and annoying.
Okay.
You know, and he's just ridiculing everybody else around him, especially Kylling, the chicken.
So that's not good.
No, it's not good. But somehow it's... I think it encapsulates this like Danish way of being, like the sarcasm thing, maybe. But you should give it a go if you want to expose Simalide to an annoying bear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, did I mention that Arthur Christmas is like a cartoon? It's 3D computer animated,
yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah, okay. It yeah, just wasn't I, well, sure well, if
you
I
didn't mention
that.
It, but I yeah, I looked it yeah, up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You're quick with the Googling.
Yes. Did you want to add something more?
Yeah, some TV, yeah? And okay. You might not like this, but Shep came home.
Okay.
Again.
Yeah, I know.
We're there with Big Mouth.
Netflix, oh yes,
Big Mouth, yes. And she told me that you did not want to watch that because of one of the voiceover actors there from Parks.
Well, I said I wasn't that excited about watching it, and I did start it one evening, but then I kind of just like didn't pay attention.
It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's like incredibly funny, and at times. Brilliant.
Very
but
raunchy.
But other times, yes, raunchy, like teenager raunchy. Well,
mm-hmm.
like almost pre-teen. It's just when the yeah. hormones are kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it drops down a bit on occasion. It just gets weird. It's the whole spectrum.
Okay.
But mostly a very good feeling I have about it. So mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and it's only like 20 minutes a show and
20 like something 6:30 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's that the douche guy from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And I really dislike that radio show host duo. and when I saw him and the cartoon character is kind of made in his style, so he reminds me of him, and then I'm just not giving him a chance, but like I really should. It seems he's, like
talking for who?
Well, the main character, I guess.
Oh, Kroll. Yeah, Nick Kroll. Yeah, that's the guy, of course.
Yeah.
I didn't get that. I didn't get that vibe from him. No, I don't remember the deuce that well, apparently.
No. He's not very memorable, I think.
No, huge fan of Parks, of course. Me, that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, all right.
Well, it's an easy thing to just watch like one day.
Yeah. You know? It's a binging thing.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you've been watching?
Yeah, Ellen's brother was visiting as well, so we tried to watch a few movies with him.
Okay.
In the evenings. And everything on Netflix. So Other People with Jesse Plemons. It seemed okay. I didn't see the whole thing.
Love Jesse Plemons. Thing.
But I love Jesse Plemons as well. And it seemed like he did a very good job in that movie. It's about a guy like Jesse Plemons is writing like a screenwriter and lives in New York and has to go back to his hometown to take care of his dying mother who's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a dark comedy thing. I can't go more into it because I fell asleep in the middle of it. So
yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's tough having visitors over. I also watched another movie called The Dinner with Richard Gere and Laura Linney, also on Netflix.
Okay.
That has a very nice premise of what if, it has to do with what if your children did something that you might not be able to forgive. It's like a hard issue that they're bringing up, but they're trying a lot of different things in it. And I don't know, it's a very uneven movie, but okay. But yeah, Richard Gere, Laura Linney, and Steve Coogan.
Ooh,
yes. It's. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it, but I enjoyed it all the way through. But I always felt like it tried a little bit too much. It tried to be a little bit too clever for its own good. It could have just been a short story instead of a whole feature length thing.
Okay.
But you know, Steve Coogan is doing a very damn fine job.
So, he does that. He does that.
Yeah. But the main thing I should probably get into is Jim and Andy.
Documentary. I've been saving that.
Yes, Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, featuring a very special contractually obligated mention of Tony Clifton.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I watched that. You've been saving it? You haven't been watching it yet?
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but okay. I'm gonna.
Okay, maybe we should get into that a little bit once you've watched it.
Yeah, perhaps,
instead, because we're both kind of liking Jim. At least our significant others are huge fans.
I'm a big fan of Jim Carrey, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I've always liked him.
Yeah.
And especially from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah,
so, of course. You know, he's just a... Well, also in The Truman Show and this movie that they're talking about in this Jim and Andy documentary, Man on the Moon.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's... Yeah, should we save that?
We should save that.
You've watched it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should save it. And a rare chance to see Jim Carrey doing something these days.
Yeah, well, maybe we should save it for the new TV show that's coming out with him. I think on HBO.
Huh.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be. Where he's the main character.
Like, let's save it for
Michel
now.
Michel Gondry actually is directing that TV show.
Let's save it for now since I've not seen it. But soon enough.
All right.
Yeah.
So should we get into our main feature?
Yes. Let's do that.
So let's get into the square.
What are the biggest challenges in running a museum?
We're a museum of modern and contemporary art, so we need to present art that is the art of today, art that is absolutely cutting edge, and the competition is fierce.
That was a clip from The Square, the new Ruben Östlund movie, Swedish director. I was very interested to see this movie because of his previous film, his debut movie called Force Majeure. So I actually went into this blind. I tried not to look into any reviews or anything about it because I had a very good feeling about the director. So The Square is about an art gallery in Stockholm that is having a new exhibition called The Square, where they basically make a square and you can step into it, and in there everybody has to basically care for each other, help each other, and around that a lot of stuff unfolds. So what do you think about like modern art?
Well, I think Östlund is he makes a lot of fun of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it well.
He starts it. Yeah.
I must admit I don't really go to art galleries that much. On occasion,
mm-hmm.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's not really like my thing, you know?
No.
But
I would like to do it a bit more, but it's not my thing either.
True. Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
You always, if you can expand your mind a little bit, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, see, this film, I've been so dying to talk about it.
Yeah.
With you. Kind of, remember I saw it a couple of months ago, maybe.
Yes. And finally it got released.
Finally
it
got released in Denmark, of course. Mm-hmm. So it's actually on demand here. Video on demand.
What?
Yeah. So I watched it again.
Oh my God.
I watched it again yesterday. Mm-hmm. And again, I was quite taken with it. Quite happy with it.
Yeah.
And the night before, I had watched Force Majeure for the first time. See, I watched them in a, you mm-hmm. know,
in
the new one first.
Now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm, I should say inspired by this guy.
Okay.
He's a favorite of mine now, this guy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Okay.
Are you
yes.
a fan? Are you a fan?
Yes, I'm definitely a fan.
Yeah?
I would go to watch any of his movies.
See, we talked about a Swedish director the other day, director of Let the Right One In.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this guy is going to go down the same Nordic noir?
You can never say never.
I hope not.
But somehow it seems like he has his, you know, he has a very clear focus on what kind of thing he wants to talk about in his movies.
Absolutely.
What he wants to discuss. So I don't think he will succumb to the whole Hollywood type movie.
Yeah.
But you know, you never know what happens. I mean, a lot of huge actors are headhunting him to kind of be in his movies, and you
sure
know,
they are.
I
was happy to see Dominic West there,
mm-hmm.
but even happier was my girlfriend, Shep, which again I've mentioned this before here. She loves Dominic West.
Okay,
from The Wire, of course.
The Wire, yes.
Yes, have I mentioned that?
No, I looked him up also just to see, so I knew you would be very happy.
But he's just in a tiny role here.
What I would like to point out is that I feel like this is very much a Danish movie when it comes down to it.
Yes, I did write down Ask Rune about that.
Yes. I was actually quite... Like, somehow I was a little bit proud that a great director like Ruben Östlund wanted to make a movie that had so much, like, Danish sensibility. Or, like, it might be just that Sweden and Denmark is very close together and we have, like, we share the same kind of humor and movie making to a certain extent. But this was a great movie that, like, a Swedish movie that had... basically a main character who was Danish and it was believable and there were Danish people up there and it was just like, I don't know, like it was, I don't know what to say about it.
We had Klaas Bang and we had his assistant speaking Danish. Klaas mm-hmm. Bang. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, that's the thing with you Danes. I mean, his name is Klaas Bang. He's not like Klaas Bang.
Klaas Bang. Yeah, Klaas Bang.
Okay.
You just have to stop the airflow. and apparently Christopher Lesser, his helper, the black guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's apparently just in children's shows in Denmark. I haven't gotten to those children's shows yet.
Okay.
But children's shows with this like long bearded guy called Herr Skeek, who is very, very politically incorrect.
Really?
Yes. And he is his sidekick or something like that.
Well, that's something for you to look up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So I will look it up a little bit, but it was because I watched this movie with Jacob, a friend of the show, who has kids in a bit older age than we do, like a few years older, and they're watching that show, and Jacob was just thinking, oh my God, no! I mean, he can't possibly act well. But I think he did.
Turns out he did. Yes, he does. Yes, it really was well.
Yeah. So should we get into the movie here?
Let me just say right from the off that it's uncomfortable. A little bit. A mildly uncomfortable most of the way through. But a different kind of uncomfortable than, for instance, Lanthimos. Mm-hmm. We kind of disagreed about... what was it called?
Lobster.
Lobster.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it that much.
No.
But this is more for me. This is more my kind of uncomfortable. This is close to Tony Erdmann, which I loved, of course.
Yeah, but I can also see the resemblance to some lobster-ish thing. A little bit.
But it's not like... He's so out there with, I forget the word. It's just, of course, it's not like dystopian, like Lanthimos is working with. But it's so outrageous what he's doing. This is also uncomfortable, but on a level we all know. And I think it's
believable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, I think his main theme is just how fucked up we are, really. Mm-hmm. Because like in the in his previous picture, Force Majeure, we have a main character that's just, he on the outside, he looks perfect. Everything is perfect, you know. Klaas Bang has his two beautiful girls, daughters. He's handsome, well-dressed. Perfect job. He's articulate, just like Thomas in Force Majeure. He's like really successful, beautiful family, gorgeous wife. And then they're like this, they're like both more style than substance, at least for a while, wouldn't you say? So no matter how good you things look on the surface, you're always human. You always fucked up really bad.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that for me is a thematically what he is doing or saying, or but of course there's like many other side themes. Like, for instance, what's with the beggars, and kind of social issues there. These are like the cream people going to art museums. They're like a rich people and outrageous modern art. And then we have apartment building with probably poor people.
Yeah, lower class at least.
Lower class, yeah. And so there's a some kind of a thing going on, and then they blow up a beggar girl. I mean, that's it's a bit outrageous.
They do that.
Yeah.
Well, a blonde beggar girl.
A blonde beggar girl. They did, want to make her blonde.
Yeah. Without the context, when you just say it like that, it seems kind of outrageous. This is within the movie, a commercial within the movie where they do that. It's not art within the movie where they do that.
It's very far from art.
Yeah. No, so... I'm not quite sure actually where they wanted to go with the beggars, other than enhance the focus on that art piece, the square, where you have to step into that square and help other people, and it's basically what beggars create for themselves when they sit down on the street. Then they create a sphere, but a square around them where they sit, and everybody tend to walk around it, you know, and not pay them any attention.
True.
So I mean, maybe there's something there.
Yeah, it's running through. I mean, in the beginning, in the scene number, I think 3 or 4, when they have that incident at the square where they there's an incident with a man attacking a woman, apparently.
Yes.
You have some person with a clipboard and saying, "Do you want to save a child, or do you want to something like that?" So it's always there, and they do focus on the beggars.
Yes. Yeah, and also just that people are not very much in the mindset of helping when they're out there. Like, there's that shift from like you're enough for yourself, like you don't want to help random strangers like that, you know. But that's what they try to address with the square thing, and because of that, Claes Bang, who is called Christian in this movie, is trying to move out of his comfort zone. It seems like he's actually trying something new because of that artwork, the art piece that's coming to his theater, museum.
I think maybe he does that towards the end there. He kind of goes out of his way to do something he wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, but I believe. Does towards like in the beginning as well with the girl in the 7-Eleven store, the beggar there.
Yes.
And I'm thinking he wouldn't have done that if it hadn't been for that art piece. Like, if it wasn't in his immediate mind, he would just be like doing like everybody else we see in the movie, just walk on past, just ignore the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, he's not preaching. I mean, it's not like poor people are good, rich people are bad, you know, because the beggars, I mean, especially the girl in the 7-Eleven, she's just rude. She's just not grateful and rude.
Yeah.
But then again, he gets help from another beggar at the mall there when he's looking for his girls.
Yeah.
So it's not black and white in any sense.
No. No, it's not. But it's still, like, to me, the whole beggar thing seemed like a way to underline the main points of the movie. But it wasn't it wasn't as believable. For instance, that scene that you were talking about when his kids disappeared in the mall, that wouldn't be what a guy like him would do. But it showed that he, being in a position of power, actually thought that he could control what, like, a beggar should do, at least. And you know, like, it showed some themes, but it just seemed a little bit like something you wouldn't do. Like, he would have gone to the information desk with his bags and say, "Hey, can you call out for my girls? They're gone."
That, you know, would be the thing to do, yes.
Yes, and he wouldn't have gone over and tapped a beggar on the shoulder and say, like, "Hey, sit here with my stuff." You know.
Yes.
Like, and those were the things that kind of, like, kept me a little bit, like, at a distance with the movie. And this was also towards the end.
You do point something out that maybe that's not the thing he should have done. But let's remember that he, and I'm saying this because I'm looking for something that's not right about this film.
Yes.
until now, I haven't found anything that's not just completely awesome about this film.
Okay.
Let's remember, and I'm just taking the position that it is fantastic.
Yes.
That he is under a lot of stress at that point. I mean, he's just gotten the news about the YouTube and stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's human. He doesn't think, you know, completely, okay. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm gonna disagree with you there. Okay. I mean, of course, if you're thinking straight, you go and do that, what you said. But
yeah. Yeah, I'm such a rational person. I just can't believe that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a rational thing to do. Yeah. But didn't you think it was incredibly funny?
Yes.
It was like laugh out loud funny at times.
I was losing it a few times, and I was just thinking, why are people not making these kind of comedies? You know, like, you need to hook it up on something real before people actually find things funny. And you know, some of the scenes are not really, well, they're meant to be funny, but they're not played in a funny way. It's like this straight-faced kind of thing. Like, I was laughing a lot when, like, I don't think it's a spoiler saying that Clay Spang, Christian's phone is being stolen.
Uh-huh.
And then they're tracking it. And they try to contemplate, you know, together, like, him and his assistant, what they should do in order to get it back. And when they're writing that letter, they're deciding that they want to write a letter to a whole apartment building because they know that it's over there. And tell them to drop off the phone, like, at some, like, place, like a 7-Eleven. But the whole process of them writing this letter and Christian being the boss, like, walking around dictating with a glass of red wine, like, what to say in this threat letter. I mean, that was hilarious. And it was so well done, you know. And it was so, like people would be so, annoyed that their phone was lost, or like they wanted to get it back, but this was not the issue, really.
No,
like, he wanted his phone back, but it was just like, yeah, okay, I mean, we'll just try this somehow. And and there were just some things that he was saying, like, maybe something that gets lost in the translation a little bit, but when he's saying that he has grandpa's cufflinks, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of my grandfather's cufflinks, you know. I was laughing so much that I was almost crying, you know.
That was for effect. He did that for effect, you know. Grandpa's cuffling, not my cuffling. Grandpa's, yes. You know, my grandpa gave me those.
Yeah.
But you know, I wrote down a few scenes that were just.
Yeah, it just seemed like they were having so much fun on the set as well. Like, these two characters, and it seemed like they were having Like it almost seemed like it was a mistake, you know, and they were just rolling with it. You know, and I just listened to a short interview with Ruben Östlund and also Elisabeth Moss, and apparently Ruben is doing a lot of improvisation when he's doing his movies.
That doesn't surprise me.
No. So.
Because it all feels very authentic.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the funny parts,
yes.
I wrote down a few. This wasn't one of them, actually, which you just mentioned.
Okay.
But it's kind of something for everything, for everyone. Like the Tourette guy, that's kind of a very base humor, you know? Kind of.
Which guy?
The Tourette guy.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was funny, putting a Tourette guy saying ass and pussy and fuck yourself and go home and show us your tits and stuff like that.
Yes.
During a very high arty kind of an interview with audience. Mm-hmm. That is funny. But it's very old school funny, putting it you know, in a wrong place kind of thing.
It also was a bit uncomfortable, and you sat there and you were thinking, like, you shouldn't be laughing at this because it is a condition. It's something that you shouldn't be laughing at. And the people in the audience also thought that, but there was also this, like, frustration that they thought it was something he did on purpose. And, like,
I was basically laughing at the face of the person hosting it.
Yes.
Because that was so funny.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. But the guys, the marketing morons, for lack of a better word, I want to use the Icelandic word pleppi, because they were like, they're like really fashionable guys. They had like this, and Shep was really in stitches about this, like this, in their jackets, they had like a Primaloft kind of a West, in the first scene.
Yeah. I didn't notice
their garments. She knows her fashion, and she was just laughing out loud because of how they looked.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, for me, they were just really, really funny characters, but maybe they were definitely professionals in their field, though, don't you think?
Yeah, but I
marketing.
I felt like it was a little bit too much on the nose in a way, like how these kind of people are, people growing up.
I didn't think it was too much on the nose. I just thought it was, I felt it was believable, although really, really funny.
Yeah.
What
they were very bad, though. Like, they were very bad marketing people. In my opinion. Well,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. They went a bit far.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think it through, really.
Start thinking about consequences.
But when you think about it, they really brought attention to the square. Like, massive attention to the square.
Yeah.
Another thing, the sex scene.
Yes.
And the condom thing, that was just hilarious.
That's one of my notes here also.
Yeah.
One of the favorite scenes.
And the pile of stones and the guy just driving.
Just the focus on those like ridiculous modern art things.
Stone piles, like 15, stone 20 piles. Stone piles in a room. And draw your own conclusions kind of thing.
Not to undermine modern art, though, but didn't one, like, a countryman of yours think, what is his name? A modern art guy? He exhibited here in Louisiana, modern art gallery in Denmark, where he actually just recreated a rocky place in Iceland here. So he just flew down like 10 tons of stone from Iceland and made a landscape in this modern art museum.
I mean, and I'm not just saying it because this is an Icelandic guy. I mean, art is supposed to push the boundaries, and sometimes it comes out as ridiculous, but for some people it's profound.
Yes.
And I'm totally all for that. But yeah. I was more thinking about the scene where when the guy on the vacuum just drove onto one of the piles, and
I know
there was this huge deal, and kind of class bang, he kind of proves himself not to be a complete idiot and call the insurance company and just go, you know, get some, you know, meet me there and we'll just figure it out. We'll just, you know, it's piles of rock.
I know.
That's it.
I know, but it also shows that he has a different kind of focus on modern art. Like, he's not seeing it as that, like, profound thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just like, yeah, it is just a pile of rocks, you know.
Yeah,
you can spin it in any way you want, but it is.
It's a pile of rocks.
You know.
And one more scene I want to mention, and this is the funniest scene for me in the whole film, and that's the conversation they're having at the museum. Elizabeth Moss and Klaus Bang with the loud stuff, some kind of a mechanism going on in the background repeatedly. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh my God, I was in tears.
Yeah. It was a very good conversation they had.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we can't really say anything about it because it would spoil it.
But the way the mechanism was stopping them all the time as well.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And the person eavesdropping a little bit in the background.
A little bit.
Yeah. You know, but, you know, that's, again, like, okay, so the movie starts with Elizabeth Moss interviewing Klaus Bang.
Yeah.
Art, basically. What is this?
Yes.
And you know, I really liked this introduction because Klaus, it was lying disheveled, completely, like, just up in his office, not really caring, probably been out the day before or something.
Yeah.
Or something. Not really caring about it. And then going directly down to this interview setting where he's completely slick and ready to answer these questions, and then he's being interviewed by a person who's very awkward in the way she's asking questions, and I thought, like, she was making fun of modern art, but I don't think that's what was the point. She was just like a bad journalist somehow. But that whole setup was basically the whole movie in a vacuum, you know? Like, him being not completely as cool as he wants to be, and the whole question about what is really art.
True.
And I think the beauty of this movie is that in the beginning he ridicules art. Modern art and that kind of people or like that kind of art form. But he also shows that it can be very effectful, because later on he's showing parts of the square, that art piece. And at some point two girls has to put down their phones in the square if they trust that they will stay there, you know. And that whole sequence with Christian talking about the art piece and you see it, that actually was very effectful, and I felt like that was a very good idea. And you know, like, all of a sudden this modern art was not all that bad. It kind of slowly fusioned into what the movie was about, you know.
I never really got, I agree with you. I never really got the feeling that modern art was bad. I guess that's something you bring to the table, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
It's not that way for me. Some of it is really funny, of course, because it's ridiculous.
Yes.
But sometimes,
I mean, yeah, but
you're get something out of it. But like you say, that's the film in a vacuum, the first scene. actually, scenes 2 and 3 were the film.
Yeah.
In a vacuum. Well, in a vacuum, not maybe not in a vacuum. But for me, just a mini film. Yeah. First scene, second film. Scene was was the guys removing the horse, man on the horse, from outside the machine. Did you remember that?
Yeah.
And they tied a rope, made a hooked onto the head of the horse. Mm-hmm. Removing it from some kind of a huge pedestal.
Yeah.
And they just totally fuck it up and break the head and it falls down. And it's like a huge fuck up. Not unlike the stuff that then goes on later with Klaus Bang and everything.
Yeah.
And then the next scene, we have this beautiful scene of a hugely impressive craftsmanship of how they make the square.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And I got to thinking, this kind of, maybe this is because I rewatched it, but yeah. this is kind of the movie for me, because that craftsmanship is everywhere in the film, in how he makes the film. Let me just mention a few things. I mean, the camera, very still, very non-invasive. Editing, very sparse, very, very sparse, and the scenes get to play out. It's perfect. It's my taste. It's perfect.
Yes. Yes. He doesn't want to make that breathing camera that's always moving and always making some sort of,
He made a good point in Incident by a Bank, which you told me to watch, and I watched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just one single shot.
Yes.
From afar.
Mm. Yeah. A short movie that he won an award for.
Some more things. The score. There's this. I liked it. It's very on point
like
for me.
Like an a cappella guy.
A cappella guy, yes.
Whom I watched it with.
Yeah.
Is a huge fan of this guy, because apparently he sings in scales that are not very easy to actually sing in, you know.
Okay, unreachable. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Good. I didn't know that.
We should have no, exactly.
But it worked. It worked for the film.
But you know what that music made me think was, if everything is as it seems, or if we're going a little bit into Christian's head, because it seemed like it came at these times where something odd might be happening or something. You know, there was one place in particular with an ape walking across
I was saving that for later, actually.
Yeah. you know, I'm not sure how to position that in a real context, you know. What I'm thinking a little bit is that he's making this experiment, like with the monkey the ape that walks in amongst the crowd, and like you have seen it again, but I almost think that there must be a monkey or an ape somewhere else that we just don't notice. Like he probably puts apes in crowd scenes that you don't notice.
Rune, are you talking about Terry Notary, or are you talking about the ape?
No, I'm talking about the ape.
In the apartment.
I'm talking about the ape in the apartment. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Not Terry. That's a completely different thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. I love that. Love that. And I had I'm going to make this point now, because you made me watch The Apes.
He was in The Apes.
Punished again for that.
Yes.
But, Vinil, Terry Notary was a better ape than all the
But he was
apes
one of
we
the
watched.
Apes.
He was one of the apes.
Yes, he was one
of
the
ape
apes.
Films. Okay.
He was Caesar's right-hand ape.
Okay, so I'm just fucking up here, okay? Okay.
Yeah, but well but
done,
you
Terry
know
Notary.
It works so well when he's just a man, you know, that makes the whole thing much more effectful.
Just another point about modern art, I guess, that scene, and he just does it so well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get back to the ape a little later.
Yes, okay.
The other one.
Okay.
The other one. The ape. Because I wanted to finish what I started about the nuts and bolts stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, the acting. You mentioned there being... Well, everybody. You mentioned there being... what's it called? You mentioned it before. Improvisation.
Improvisation. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That rings true because it's so... Yes. It feels so real, out of real life.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue. I don't know how much of it is written in this light, but it's very well constructed. As an example, when he loses the phone, his boss at the museum, a woman who has the dog, she comes in and he said, yeah, I lost my phone, man. I'm just, this is my phone here. And she said, like in one sentence, we know how she is, what she is. And she said, is it your work phone? Is it your personal phone? You know, the one line. Yes. And you know, okay, she's that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's clear right there.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's very good. That's not improvised, I'm sure.
No.
So the, the screenplay is very good.
That she's her. Yeah. She's the boss.
Really. Yeah. The structure, I have no complaints about that. It's 145 minutes. And somehow, you don't want to go to the bathroom or anything. It's just, you want to just stare at the screen the whole 145 minutes.
Which you did probably when you watched it in the cinema, or what?
Yeah, both times. Yeah,
because there's a break.
Yes. No.
No? No. Okay.
In the cinema.
Yeah.
Bio Paradis.
No, Bio Paradis doesn't do it.
No, no, they don't do breaks.
That's good.
Yes, that's let's not go there.
But, did you notice the very like the extreme focus on squares all over this movie? Like, of course, the artwork was a square, but there was always squares in every scene. You had those like very straight lines, and you had squares like. Through windows, there were paintings of squares. There were like everything was set up that way, and it just like it seemed like an art piece in itself when I was watching it from a cinematography standpoint, because everything was so thought out, you know, well planned, and. Them talking about the square being helpful and all that, and then it being shown to you in pictures all the way through, that was beautiful, I think.
I can't say I noticed that so much, there being a square in every scene, but I did notice the framing again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And that just
also
appeals
because you have
to
such
me.
Like fixed frames, like you have static shots.
Yeah.
There were a few pans. There was one in particular that was very, very long. When you pan to, like Christian is at home, and then the camera pans to a mirror shot of him, and then it continues to pan and pan and pan of him going to the front door.
Yeah.
And his girls are coming home, but it stops right at a painting of only squares, like probably like 10 squares.
Okay.
You know, so
I didn't notice this. No.
It's kind of like in the middle of the movie when everything's like all the shit starts to hit the fan.
I remember the scenes, you know, but not the painting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're there, and it's very well done, and it just makes the whole thing very cohesive. I have nothing to put on that.
Another thing about the music, I don't know.
Yeah,
because we mentioned the score, but then these incredibly cool techno scenes.
Yes.
couple yes. of those.
Yeah. Diegetic music.
Yes.
If you will.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it at the time, but when you say it, of course.
Yes. Yes.
It's diegetic
of course
music.
It's like that.
I know yeah. the word now, diegetic. Yes. Yeah. And when you talk about panning, there was some panning in force majeure, especially in the on the slopes. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it was fairly similar in style, mm-hmm. I would say.
Also, very funny and very morbid and very, very dark.
Incredibly good film. Shall we? I have a theory about the ape in the apartment. But
in the apartment? Okay.
The second appearance of the monkey, the ape, just kind of throws that for me a little bit.
Exactly.
I was thinking, I mean, why put it back? That's like saying, yes, there was a monkey there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to
yeah.
him to leave that open for interpretation, because that scene, the whole sex scene and how they go about that and how strange it all is, mm-hmm. it's like they have... they're not doing this because of their urges. At the same time, we have a monkey, chimpanzee, I believe, in the mm-hmm. next room. She seems to be reading a paper.
Yeah.
Something, like a magazine yeah. or something. Mm-hmm. And she's sitting on the couch. Like, there's no... The whole animalistic thing has been removed mm-hmm. from the monkey and from the sex.
Yes.
So I thought yeah. that was interesting. But then again, they show the monkey again, and it's just... Mm-hmm. Do they not know that a monkey like that can just rip you to pieces? I mean, yeah. really? Are we going to make let it be loose there? This
yeah,
size?
Yeah, just that she has it, you know?
In Sweden?
But, you know, that whole point, you know, it might be one of the reasons why... I'm subtracting a star, you know.
Okay.
Because had it just been that one incident where you see the ape or like the monkey, I guess that is a monkey. Then they're drunk, both of them. You can like say that it wasn't really there due to that. It's something that they like didn't really. It wasn't really there, but no. it serves a purpose, maybe. But having it again, it became this really real thing. Like, she even almost interacts with the monkey, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
but she doesn't, though.
No, she almost does, but yeah, I know. So maybe it's still just a representation of some inner urge in people, but it, like, since all of the movies seem so like real, then it makes it weird having a strange scene like that with like, why does she have this monkey? It kind of starts all those kind of conversations, and it actually made me rethink, like, who is she? Who is this journalist? Like, is she a journalist? Like, why is she hanging out at the museum after the interview? It seemed like it was such a small interview in the beginning, and I had no idea why she would show up later, you know?
She's just an American girl living in Stockholm, you know, working on yeah. some journalistic stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel weird to me, but the second appearance no. of the monkey does feel weird. I agree with yes. you there, but at least
the
no one interacts.
The second appearance of the monkey.
Yeah.
It sounds very profound.
but at least no one interacts with it.
No, that is true. But the monkey is putting on lipstick in the second scene or something like that. Like doing something
yeah.
with makeup.
Yeah. It could, I guess you could.
Maybe it has some deeper meaning.
Could be. Probably it does. It seems, all this seems very thought out.
Yeah, but is the monkey actually there? Would you say?
I'm not sure it is. I can't. No. You know.
I kind of hope it's not there, and maybe upon a future watch of this movie, I will be clear that it's not there.
There's a scene in Force Majeure that's, I mean, there's like screaming, dancing, and almost naked men.
Yeah.
When Thomas is looking for his family, they're not answering the phone. Then we have a brief mm-hmm. scene of like 20 almost naked, screaming, oiled up, drinking men.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some techno music, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably his inner mechanism, wouldn't you say? I mean, maybe it's they were not there, obviously. So that
well, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Going
but I
on
think
that,
I just
said, going on well, that evidence, it, maybe a, the ape wasn't there.
Maybe not. I hope it wasn't. The third appearance of a monkey, though.
Yes.
Or like a human monkey.
Yes, Terry Notary.
Yeah. That was amazing.
That was amazing.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about like his first appearance in the movie, actually, because he was part of an exhibition at the museum. And the first time you see him, it's kind of like a big screen with Terry Notary basically just sitting and looking very ape-like. And having this kind of blank stare, in a way, like observing the room that he's in. This is a projection. Then, like 30 minutes later, Christian is sitting in the same room, and the like Terry Notary is still that monkey. Like it's the same exact same projection. All of a sudden, you have Christian in the foreground, and the. The ape is looking at him, and all of a sudden it seemed like he's like angry, or like he's looking at him in this very different way than how you perceived the look before. It's kind of like that you know the Russian test, like movie test, where you have like a guy just making like a reaction face, and then you put like a cup of coffee in front of him, and then the reaction face, and then you have a different kind of like you read a different kind of reaction,
yeah,
because of the related picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like that was one of those scenes where I was thinking, this is very cool art stuff. You know, I would love to sit in here and look at this stuff. You know, that's
true.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah. So
and we don't really know what's with the art, because this Lola Arias person is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe
the square is an actual installation from her. Although I did Google it, and it's it's not apparent. I couldn't find it related to her, but maybe she has been working all kinds of mediums. Art mediums. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is her working with this idea of the square inside a film. I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah. That would be cool. Or maybe it's just Ruben who is trying his hand at modern art and
why
using
is he,
his medium.
Yeah. Why is he using Lola Arias' name, though?
Maybe it's a friend or like some person he really admires.
Yeah.
In the modern art
sphere. Looking for a date, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
But maybe. I don't want to subtract anything from this. I gave it 5 out of 5. This is 5 out of 5 for me. Also, Force Majeure. I decided this is how a movie should be.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think. It's entertaining. It's enormously funny.
Yeah.
And I cannot find a weak point. I mean, there are things to talk about, like the ape and some other things, but it's not a weakness for me at all. So this is film as it should be for me.
Yeah.
5 out of 5.
Yeah. It's really hard to make a perfect movie.
Of course.
And And you know, when I was watching this, like for the majority of the time, I was thinking this is a 5-star thing. Yeah. Then it started to be like a 5.5-star thing.
4.5.
No, 4.5. Yes. 4.5.
Okay.
I actually landed on a 4, but that's like it's because of that kid, you know, who wants an apology. It just didn't it didn't ring true to me, and there was something like with Christian's behavior towards that guy, and like it started to feel a bit constructed, this whole thing, for a movie that was so organic and so like it was just alive in a way. Then that, like the payoff of that whole storyline was just like, in my opinion, if it had to stay at a full 5-star thing, it should probably stop around the Terry Notary scene, you know, because after that point it started to go a little bit downhill. I don't think some of the consequences of that social media video was actually all that important.
I thought that was really interesting, though.
Like the consequences of it?
Yes, the consequences and the press briefing there. Because it's actually a very good point made by one of the newspaper men saying, well, you know.
Yeah, but they had already discussed that beforehand. Like he had already come out and said like that was his opinion beforehand. It was just regurgitating that same point. Because he had already said that the museum should stand up for like free speech and stuff like that. Now,
so how authentic is the Museum for Modern Art in Stockholm if they don't stand by this? If they stand by the freedom of speech thing?
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
I think. And while I understand your point, doesn't bother me at all. I liked it. And the boy didn't bother me at all. What did you think? What did he think was going to happen if you send a letter? I get a letter like this in my post box, and what? What now? Did I steal from you?
Yeah, but they spent so much time writing it, so it wasn't really a threat altogether. It's more like, if you are the person who actually stole my phone.
No, that's not true.
You know? Isn't it?
No, it's not. That's not true. They did write that. I mean, that they couldn't have written that, because if you write something like that, the person writing it knows that he doesn't have anything. You have to say, I know it's you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they
don't think it. Yeah.
No. I'm pretty sure about this. I'm pretty sure about this.
But how did this person, this little guy, find, like, track him down? How can
there was the 7-Eleven. There was they named the 7-Eleven store.
Yeah, but then the address of the guy and then the whole reaction of Christian towards the little kid who feels mistreated.
There are ways. I mean, he made the woman call them, and there are ways to connect the phone number and stuff like that.
But still, like, Christian would have just apologized, and that would be the end of it. There was nothing else in it. Like, he felt bad enough about the whole situation beforehand.
Christian is human. He's very, very,
not in,
very, very human.
Not
and
in front
very,
of his
very
two
flawed.
Daughters.
That's the whole point of Christian, I think.
Yes, maybe.
So we disagree.
I got this. Like, have you ever seen Better Off Dead? The John Cusack movie?
Sure, yeah. Not for 20 years, but yes.
No,
sure.
but there's a little guy saying, I want my $2.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yes.
he reminded me of that guy.
Yeah.
Like an extremely angry little guy who felt mistreated.
Yeah, I don't know. I was pretty happy with the little guy. I was happy with what he did as well.
Me too. I think he did it really well.
I mean, what he is? He's just this little guy. He's angry.
Mm-hmm.
He decides to do something about this.
Yes,
he's a special. Chaos. He's a special little guy. Yeah, maybe that's a word he knows in Swedish pretty well, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and this little guy also makes the Lars von Trier reference with Dansk Jævle.
Dansk Jævle, is that I didn't
like there's this Lars von Trier TV series called Riel, the Kingdom Hospital. You don't know about it?
No.
It's a horror TV series that takes place at the National Hospital right up here next to us.
Okay.
Whenever you go to that National Hospital, you can't not think about this TV series, which is like a you know, very, very scary TV series.
You should check that out.
Yeah. And there's a head surgeon who is Swedish, who is always so angry with Danish people. And he's always going up to the top of this roof of the hospital. And from there, you can actually see just the shoreline of Sweden. And then he's looking towards Sweden and yelling out like Dansk Jævle.
Okay.
It's fairly good. Yes.
Okay. It's a good reference as well.
Yeah. I was thinking it would be a reference a little bit because the movie was so Danish at its core.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't feel like I was watching a Swedish movie here.
Okay.
Like it was English, it was Danish, it was Swedish. Yes.
So you're claiming it for Denmark.
What?
So you're claiming it for Denmark.
Well, a little bit. I would be proud to do so because I think he is probably one of the best directors around right now.
Most definitely.
You know, so claiming a Swedish guy as a Danish director, sure.
I'll take that. But anyway, that's four stars for you, five for me.
Yeah. And but it is extremely good. You know?
It is extremely good. Yeah. I mean, if I give five stars, it doesn't mean it's perfect. But I'm absolutely sure it's worthy of five from me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always trying to look for that perfect movie, in my opinion. You know, so I'm always reserving five stars for something extremely good, you know, that I can't put any fingers on. And I felt like there was too many things that were a little bit like not completely as well, probably as I wanted them, but there are a lot of good things, and I can also feel when I've been discussing it with you, then like the things that you're bringing up, that they are really good, you know. And it makes a great movie. It's hilarious. It's dramatic. It's uncomfortable, especially that Terry Notary scene with him being an ape. Like that was beautiful in its own right. I mean, that could have been a scene just by itself, you know.
Sure.
Like a movie in itself.
I guess. I mean, it's. Very good scene, but kind of uncomfortable to watch, though.
Yes, very uncomfortable to watch, but there's so much stuff going on in that. There's so much stuff, and I loved how it progressed from something really funny and to something, well, not quite as funny.
You need to be a good director to direct that. It was a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of perfect directing, I would say.
I mean, I was on pins and needles. Isn't that what you say? Like throughout that whole scene, like I felt like I was there almost. Mm. Like I think everybody in my audience was just sitting there like without breathing, thinking, what is going to happen here?
this is an example of a scene that needs to be seen in a movie theater. It hasn't doesn't have the same effect at home. I've seen it twice now, and I can tell
you've seen it at home. Yeah.
But anyway, I think we should wrap things up. Yeah.
Yes.
We haven't really decided what to do next time, but we'll come up with something nice. Yeah.
Yes, I really hope so. There are a few movies coming out here for the holiday season, and we're trying to keep away from Justice League and the likes.
Oh my God, we should have a news section in the beginning. Justice League is out. We don't care.
Yes. Well, but sometimes we care about superhero movies, but not when they're directed by Zack Snyder.
Agreed.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
next time will be a surprise, but keep looking at our Twitter feed or our Facebook postings. Then you'll probably know what we're up to, right?
We'll see what happens.
Probably Twitter. I'm trying to be a little bit Twitter.
Yeah.
Focused a little bit. Maybe some of you saw that I went to watch The Square with Håkan.
Yes.
Yes.
Håkan. That was my savior tonight, actually, Håkan, because the other thing was undrinkable. Still is.
So sad for that little beer.
Yes.
It's a perfectly fine Einstück Christmas beer.
Probably very good, for most people.
It's just darker. Yeah, but it's good to know. I'm not going to buy you any dark stout beers or anything. Yeah. So, as usual, you can find us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, Pod Conversation, and on SoundCloud. Just again, look for our name. The Conversation, the Nordic Film Podcast.
Yeah.
Our website is also called theconversationpodcast.net.
And a cool website it is.
It is. It is a cool website.
Yeah.
Letterboxd,
yes, we're there. Both of us individually. Mm-hmm. And we make a list of the movies we discussed today, if you want to check that out.
Yeah. And please follow us over there. And we can follow back. It's great. It's a great website, Letterboxd.
To see what people
are watching. Actually, just today I realized I really want to watch a Brazilian movie called Bingo.
Okay, haven't heard of it.
Apparently, it's the clown movie of the year, which is not it, but another clown.
I haven't still gotten over the whole it hype.
No.
That's one for the storybooks,
Some things you just don't, get.
No. Anyways, let's not go there.
No, let's not.
Thanks for today.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it was great watching an amazing movie. Yeah. Everybody should check out.
Go watch The Square. And go watch Force Majeure as well, if you haven't already.
And also, why not start with a short movie, An Incident by a Bank?
That's on YouTube.
It's free on Vimeo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So until next time.
Goodbye.